Welcome to Animal Airwaves Live on WUFT-FM, our weekly hour-long show devoted to the discussion of the health and welfare of animals. I'm Dana Hill, and today is Friday, the 6th of July. I'm glad you've tuned in today, and I'm happy to welcome to the program today for the first time from the University of Florida College of Veterinary Medicine, Danielle Jonas, who is a certified veterinary technician. And we're going to be talking today about veterinary nurses, the folks who are really an important part of your pet's healthcare team. We're going to talk about what they do, and we're going to learn about how your pet is treated by the folks who really have a hands-on experience taking care of your pet. So Animal Airwaves Live will be back after this news from NPR. Welcome to Animal Airwaves Live. I'm Dana Hill, and this is our weekly hour-long show devoted to discussion of the health and welfare of animals. I'm happy you've tuned in today on this Friday, July 6, 2018, and I hope you'll enjoy this program because I'm going to be talking today with a guest who's never been here before, but she has a really interesting perspective on animal health, and it's one that I think is super relevant to the topic at hand, you know, the health and welfare of animals. I usually speak with veterinarians, and of course, veterinarians are absolutely crucial in terms of treating our pets, but so are veterinary technicians, the sort of nurses that really have hands-on experience taking care of our animals in veterinary clinics all around the country. And Danielle Jonas, welcome to the program. I'm glad you could come in today.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Let's talk about the veterinary technician and what she does at a veterinary clinic. Let's say your neighborhood veterinarian, when someone arrives and brings in a pet, a vet tech is probably one of the first people that you'll meet.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. When you come into a veterinary practice, in private practice, what will happen is you go into an exam room, a veterinary technician or an assistant will come in and take a history, find out what's going on with your animal, sometimes do a quick exam on your animal, watch what's going on, and then go and talk to our doctors. And then everybody comes back in, we do the exam together, assist with the restraint of your animal during the exam so everybody remains safe and comfortable, keeping your pet happy during the exam, talking about how cute it is the whole time, of course. And then together we make the treatment plan, and then we basically take our orders from the doctor as to what they would like for us to do for the pet, and then we go ahead and start doing everything, whether that's drawing blood or getting prescriptions ready, taking samples such as, you know, ear cytology, if they had an ear infection, those sorts of things.
Mm-hmm. And then if a kind of a procedure is required, mm-hmm. like let's say that there is a spay or a neuter or something, yeah, you would be on hand for that as a veterinary technician.
Yeah, absolutely. In private practice and in specialty practice such as at UF, our veterinary technicians are crucial to any procedure that we're doing. So they are the ones that are anesthetizing the animal. They're prepping for surgery. They know all of the medications that your animal is getting, the correct doses, what to watch for, how to keep the animal safe. During that time, usually the doctor is actually getting ready for surgery, you know, scrubbing in, doing all of the things that they need to do to prepare while we're getting the animal actually ready and moved into the OR or wherever the space is that we're doing. If it's a dental, for instance, we are the ones doing the dental cleaning, actually doing all of the scaling and everything, just like when you go to the dentist, but the animal's asleep under anesthesia. And then oftentimes we're assisting with surgery, so we may actually be scrubbed in. We may be holding instruments or assisting to hold open the surgical site if we needed to. Those sorts of things were really crucial to all of those procedures.
Now, let us imagine a scenario in which an animal is being treated somewhere where it might need to stay overnight. Mm-hmm. Maybe it needs to be in an oxygen cage, yeah, or maybe it needs just some follow-up care the next day. Maybe it needs to be supervised, mm-hmm, just to be watched following a procedure like, mm-hmm, a surgery. Maybe, mm-hmm, it's coming out of anesthesia, et cetera. a veterinary technician is probably somebody who has constant eyes on the animal.
Absolutely. So we're often referred to as veterinary nurses. And in that capacity, in terms of a hospitalized patient, I think that that's a very accurate description of what we're doing. We're checking on the pet at regular intervals. We're doing what we call TPRs, which is temperature, pulse, and respiration. So making sure that just their baseline levels are where they should be and alerting the doctor if we're concerned about anything. And watching their surgical sites for any sort of issues, if they've had surgery, if they're in an oxygen cage, making sure they're breathing well and their oxygen levels are maintaining where they should. We're definitely very much hands-on with the hospitalized patients. And that could be at a private practice here in Gainesville, for instance. A lot of times that is just a veterinary technician who's checking in on the animal all night and there's no doctor there. For emergency practices, there's doctors there, obviously. At UF, we have a whole team who they're technicians, a lot of technicians that stay overnight for all of our hospitalized patients. And then we also have doctors that are there.
So there are veterinary technicians who are working the third shift. I mean, working
absolutely.
Overnight.
Yeah, 24 hours.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it is a job that in some ways it's not necessarily hidden from the human animal owner, but it is maybe a little bit ill-defined in the imaginations of many people who have pets.
Yes.
Because you think of the veterinarian as being the person who's treating your animal. But when one has to, let's say, go to the hospital for human medicine, you will encounter probably many more nurses than you will encounter doctors, physicians.
Mm-hmm.
And is that a decent enough analogy, a nurse to veterinary technician?
Yeah, it's actually interesting that you bring that up. There's a national initiative, actually, that's getting a lot of momentum this year to convert what we are called from veterinary technicians to veterinary nurses. And the largest crux of that is helping the public understand what we do and that nurses are obviously something that most people have encountered when they've gone to the doctor or their loved ones have gone to the doctor or the hospital. So that's an easier analogy for them to be able to understand all of the things that we're doing.
I can see why your profession might want to have a kind of reimagining of or even a changing the description. I think of nurses in human medicine as absolute heroes, right?
Mm-hmm.
I have not had to have a lot of medical care myself, but I have been in the hospital with others and I've seen the amazing work that nurses do in really challenging situations. Mm-hmm. Not that physicians don't do a similarly great work, but there are many more nurses that you see than physicians, and
absolutely,
they're caring for you constantly. And when I think about the care that a pet might need in a veterinary setting, then I should also imagine that behind the scenes, there are numerous veterinary technicians who are making sure that the animal is comfortable, that the animal is fed, that the animal is safe, that the animal is responding well to the treatment that it has just received.
Absolutely. In a private practice, such as your family veterinarian, the ratio is usually about 3 to 4 technicians to 1 doctor. So if you think about it that way, we're really kind of the worker bees of the practice. And, you know, we develop our treatment plan with the doctor and then set off to do that. And it does take a lot of hands to do care on animals a lot. And also just to make sure that the doctors are well supported. There's kind of a phrase that is tossed around sometimes, which is let the doctors do the doctoring and the techs do the teching. And I think that that's really important. There are very defined things that only doctors can do. So it's surgery, it's writing prescriptions. We're not allowed to do that. There are a handful of things that we are not allowed to do. The rest of it, we are absolutely allowed to do and can and want to. And really, there are a lot of us that are really pushing in any practice to do more, be a bigger part of the team.
I think in my years of discussions with veterinarians on this program, and I'm sure I've talked to more than 100 in the years that the show has been on, I think that to a person, these veterinarians would say that they couldn't do what they're doing without the technicians who are there by their side.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I've worked with a lot of veterinarians over the course of my career. I've worked in 2 private practices and then I've been at UF now for 9 years. So a lot of vets. And I would say across the board, they are incredibly appreciative of the work that the technician does in the practice. We do anything from handling tough phone calls to doing schedule coordination to then all of the patient care, making sure that your owners are happy when they leave and they understand everything that they need to understand. So all of the actual client education about what we're doing, what to expect with your patient when they go home. That's generally all technicians, and the doctors are so grateful to have technicians that want to be in that role and want to be pushed and challenged to really learn more, be more conversant in everything that we're doing.
You're listening to Animal Airwaves Live here on WUFTFM, our weekly hour-long show devoted to the discussion of the health and welfare of animals. I'm Dana Hill. My guest is Danielle Jonas, certified veterinary technician from the University of Florida College of Veterinary Medicine. We're going to take a short break, and then we're going to be back with more Animal Airwaves Live right after this. Welcome back to Animal Airwaves Live on WUFTFM, our weekly hour-long show devoted to the discussion of the health and welfare of animals. I'm Dana Hill. My guest today is Danielle Jonas, certified veterinary technician from the University of Florida College of Veterinary Medicine. And we're talking today about the role of veterinary nurses, the folks who you meet at the veterinary clinic and your pet is in constant contact with when it is receiving treatment. And when we left off, Danielle, I think that we had sort of laid out the crucial role that veterinary technicians play in a practice, be it a private practice or a large veterinary hospital. I think that what some folks might find interesting and really worth understanding, too, is the training required to become a veterinary technician. It is certainly not something that you just walk off the street and you put on a coat and then you're just a vet tech. I mean, you've got to learn, because there are so many aspects to the job that you're doing.
Absolutely. There is a broad range of paths to becoming a veterinary technician. So it kind of depends basically in your state as to what can be called a veterinary technician. I was certified in Wisconsin, for instance, and they have a very defined path that certain tasks can only be done by veterinary technicians as opposed to veterinary assistant. So I started as an assistant, was not allowed to anesthetize patients, was not allowed to place catheters, for instance. Those are all regulated things that you can't do. Became certified, and then was trained to do all of those things. Here in Florida, currently, we are not a required certification state. So when you go into your family veterinarian here, there are lots of people who are not certified, but we can call them technicians, and they're incredibly skilled. They're just as compassionate and lovely and incredible technicians. They just don't have the certification at this time. We are moving towards that in Florida. So there are a few different ways to become certified. In different states, there's different ways to do it. Most of the time, people go to school. So here in Florida, we have several schools. One of the bigger ones that people know about is at St. Pete. You can do an associate's or a bachelor's in veterinary technology. And then we all have to take a national board exam. In some states, in Wisconsin, I was lucky that they had this option because I was not able to go to school when I was there, but they have an on-the-job training. So you can do 2 years working as a veterinary technician. You have to then have some reference letters and everything saying that you know what you're doing. And then you have to study and take the board exam just like everybody else who has gone to school for it. So that was the option that I took. It was not easy to learn everything that needed to be learned that people who went to school learned. A huge time investment, but it is a way that you can do it. And I'm thankful that was an option, because at the time school was not an option for me.
And when you finished, I imagine that there are, if veterinary medicine is like the healthcare field as a whole, job opportunities available for veterinary technicians.
Yeah, we have a lot of shortage in a lot of communities for veterinary technicians. It's definitely a growing field still, which is exciting. Similar to human nursing, where there's lots of communities that really need well-trained nurses, they also need well-trained technicians.
Do you have any thoughts about why that may be?
I think that it's a career that is not necessarily well-known. I think a lot of people, as we discussed already, don't really understand the role of what we're doing in the practice, don't necessarily understand that it's something that can be incredibly fulfilling and that you can actually do as a career. It's not the next step is being a veterinarian. There's most of us in this career as a technician aren't working to be a veterinarian. I get asked all the time, oh, so are you going to go to vet school? And my answer is always no. But when I'm asked why, my usual answer is that I get to do all the fun stuff without having to make all of the tough decisions. So I get to do all the patient care and the really exciting things, but aren't in charge of the really tough surgeries and, you know, the life or death decision making. That said, I get to be part of all of that, and my opinion is valued as a technician in the practice.
Is a really important point mm-hmm. that you just brought up, right? Feeling like you're a valuable member of the team. And we talked before the break about how, in my experience, the veterinarians have been nothing but glowing in their praise for mm-hmm. the techs with whom they work. But that said, you know, when you are at work and you're in the clinic and you're taking care of animals, knowing that your experience that you've had over the years is mm-hmm. something that other professionals with whom you're working find valuable.
Yes, absolutely. I think that the best practices are very tech-centered. So they understand the value of the technician and they kind of let the techs run the course of the day, basically. The doctors are there to do all of their appointments, they do their procedures, but the technicians are the ones saying, hey, this is what's next. Please come over here. I've prioritized this because I think this animal is more in need. You know, we're the ones laying first eyes on most of the pets when they come in. And so having that opportunity to be somebody that gets to say, this is important, please come over here and deal with this, is very, very important. And I think luckily all of the practices that I've worked in, the technicians feel very empowered to speak up. And if they're concerned about an animal or maybe they have a concern about a treatment plan, and that can be a tough conversation, right? You have a doctor that comes out and says, I think this is what we're going to do with this pet. But maybe I know this pet because I've seen it a few times and I know that that pet's not going to do well with that option. Or I'm a little concerned about a drug that maybe we're going to use for sedation. I love working as a technician in a practice where you can say, hey, I have some concerns about this. Can we talk about it? And in the end, it may still be that whatever the original plan is what we're going to do. But working with veterinarians who value technicians so highly and understand that our opinions are just as valid is really important.
If we can, to back up a little bit back yeah. to the topic of education,
yes.
someone who is, say, I don't know, a younger person right now mm-hmm. who really loves animals, mm-hmm. loves science, maybe likes the idea of working in a field with animals, mm-hmm. But is maybe a little bit dissuaded by the tremendous expense of veterinary school.
Yes.
By the hyper-competitive admissions process yeah. for veterinary schools, given the relatively limited number of veterinary schools mm-hmm. in the United States. Someone who is young and thinking about a career, how might he or she imagine the field of veterinary nursing and how good an option that might be? I mean, it could be something that within – you know, X number of years following, say, high school or, mm-hmm. You know, you could be in a professional setting mm-hmm. and, you know, making a decent amount of money mm-hmm. and doing the kind of work that you want.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's a really interesting career path for people who do have that love for animals and do have an interest in science. I think that both of those things are incredibly important. A lot of people think, I just love animals and that means I should be working with them. And there are lots of career options for that, but maybe being a tech is not that. It's a lot of science and it's a lot of math and behavior and psychology. You can't go into this field if you don't like working with people. That's another thing. We're working with clients nonstop. At any practice, you're also working with referring doctors, so people that are sending their pet over to you. So you're going to be talking to other doctors that are not your doctors with whom you're comfortable. So you really have to be able to be an excellent communicator and be able to defuse situations. You have to deal with a little bit of psychology along the way because you're dealing with very anxious people who are really worried about what is basically their child and you need to be able to keep a level head and explain what's going on and not get caught up in the emotions of it. So there's so many things about it that are incredibly interesting. And as a young person who's just getting out of high school, I think it's a great career to consider if any of those things interest you.
But you've hit on something really important, and mm-hmm. that is that communication is an absolutely indispensable yes. skill. Mm-hmm. Were you always a decent communicator?
I think yes. This is actually my second career. Being a veterinary technician is my original career was working with juvenile delinquents. So I was trained a lot in psychology and sociology and how to communicate with a broad range of people. So yes, I think that I received a lot of training through that, through my bachelor's. So yes, but it's also something that I enjoy. I like talking to people.
Is the communication with your professional colleagues any more or less challenging than communication with the human clients who are, as you mentioned, understandably anxious for mm-hmm. the health and safety of their animals?
I don't know that it's more difficult. I think it's more nuanced sometimes. It's understanding where everybody's coming from. We're stressed too. You know, an animal comes in, it's an emergency situation. You need to be able to move quickly. And as a team, communicate about all of the things that are happening, what you're concerned about, and what the next step is very quickly. So you need to be willing to speak up when you need to and willing to take direction well. And sometimes those can be two traits that don't sit well together. So you need to be, you have to have both in order to be in the sort of a profession.
Let's talk about a day in the life of a veterinary technician. Depending on, you know, what shift you work, if mm-hmm. you're at a 24-hour clinic, mm-hmm. you know, let's just talk about in general maybe the person – well, let's talk about you, okay? Because you do okay. work at a clinic that is yeah. it happens to be a 24-hour yes. clinic, right, mm-hmm. a veterinary hospital. And that means that something could come in at any time of the day or night. Now, one assumes that if an animal is coming in at 2 a.m., it's an emergency. A few people probably
yes,
come in at 2 a.m. and say, I just thought it would be a good time for a dental cleaning.
Yeah. let's hope not.
Yeah, so the overnight stuff is definitely going to be emergencies we're talking about. Mm-hmm. But on a given day, you might see any number of animals that are there for just kind of a regular well visit.
Mm-hmm.
And talk us through what's going on then.
Yeah, so I think, you know, working in specialty practice, kind of what you're touching on about wellness visits versus other kinds of things, we have so many specialties, which a lot of our veterinarians have come on to the show to discuss. So we have things from primary care, which I think Dr. Stone has been on the show a few times, Dr. Mandizi, Dr.
Yes.
Wirth. In those, it's a lot of wellness visits. It's a lot of sweet animals that are just coming in for their vaccines. And so those technicians are going to get to know that animal probably its entire life, which is a really special thing to be able to know it from the time it came in as an 8-week-old puppy until at the end of its life, you know, hopefully when it's nice and old.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a really cool thing. In specialty practice, you get a lot of animals that are quite ill or quite injured, that their family veterinarian don't do that level of specialty medicine, and so they've referred them over. So the veterinary technician in that, those technicians, say if you're a neurology technician or an ophthalmology technician, you're highly skilled and highly trained specifically in that specialty. So you can do the really detailed exams that are needed in order to try to detect what is going on with this animal quickly. So we help a lot with that. We have students, obviously, at UF, and so a big part of what we're doing is teaching the students also. So we need to be experts in what we're doing and teaching them the nursing skills and the nursing care that's needed for all of these patients. So that's another kind of other level working in academia that it's a very interesting thing as a technician to be put in that educator role. We oftentimes just think of that as the veterinarians that get to do that, but we're teaching all day long.
And again, another aspect of your job in which communication is a
yes.
very important feature.
Mm-hmm.
So let us say that you're working in a practice and for a moment, let's just talk about the kind of well visit.
Okay.
And we'll talk about some of the specialty
yeah,
stuff
yeah.
in a minute. But during a well visit, you know, I'm the patient. I brought in my kitty and just sort of am waiting in a room. And is a veterinary technician is probably one of the first people I'm going to see. And that mm-hmm. technician, in my experience, seems to Just kind of talk to the client, the human mm-hmm. client, and say, oh, you know, what are you in here, you know, for mm-hmm. today? You take some measurements, you do some of the initial mm-hmm. stuff, right? Mm-hmm. And I've always kind of wondered what happens when you take that animal kind of through the door into the area that I don't see.
Yeah, that's a good question. A lot of owners get very nervous about that. You know, we get funny things about, are you experimenting on my pet? And absolutely not. That is not what's happening. When we say that we need to take your pet to the back to do things, usually what we're doing is a more detailed exam that might be difficult because of room constraints, that we just don't have enough space to lay your animal down and do the sort of exam that we need to do. Let's say they're having an orthopedic issue, for instance. We need to lay your animal down all the way and try to get them as calm as possible to be able to really feel all of their limbs, know what's going on. We may need to be taking samples, which honestly, sometimes in front of owners, they don't really want to see us poking their animals. And in the ideal world, we get blood on the first try and everything is great. Sometimes just the stars are not aligned for that day, whether it's because the animal's veins just aren't cooperating or we're having a tough vein day. You know, a good technician can always admit, I'm not the person to do this blood draw. I need somebody else. So those sorts of things are much easier in the back, where we can just quickly have all of our supplies there, get all of our samples quickly, and then bring your animal back in.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you then come back into the room, mm-hmm. a veterinarian might come along as well.
Yes.
And what have you just discussed with the veterinarian before you've come into the room?
Yeah, so usually what we have discussed is what we call the history. So, and that's an incredibly important part of your visit. You need to, as the owner, be able to tell us the most accurate history of whatever is going on with your pet. You're there for a reason, whether that's a wellness visit or your pet is sick. And we need to know everything there is to know about that so we can start to put the puzzle pieces together. I like to use the analogy, when we're working with animals, it's similar to working with a toddler. Something's going on. They can't tell you what it is. They will bite you if they get angry. It's very similar to a toddler. And so you as the owner have the responsibility of telling us as much as possible. And then we have to kind of suss through all of that, figure out what are the important parts for what is actually going on, and then be able to tell that to the veterinarian. I'm sure you've gone to the doctor with your cat before and maybe talked about all sorts of things that your cat is doing just because you have stories about your cat, and that's all great. But we have to be able to have that great conversation with you and make that connection, but also be able to figure out which parts of that relate to what's going on.
That is something that maybe people who are listening to this program and who've gone to a veterinary office before and had a series of questions posed, mm-hmm. these might seem like strange questions. Why mm-hmm. are you asking me this? I'm here because my cat is doing X.
Right.
But these questions do have an important purpose.
Absolutely. Absolutely. As veterinary technicians, we are very skilled in getting our histories. So we're quick to start to pick up on something small that you may have mentioned that we're like, oh, okay, we need to ask these five other questions to try to figure out, is that part important? Does it actually fit with some story that I'm kind of trying to make in my head of how this all happened? You know, let's say you came in because your dog is limping. You have no idea what happened to your dog. It just came inside. We don't know. So there's a whole bunch of questions that we need to ask to try to figure out what may have happened. And as technicians, we're the first line to get all that information. It is funny because as technicians, an experience across the board, and it's not because owners are doing this maliciously at all, you'll tell us the story of whatever it is. We go back and tell the veterinarian, and the veterinarian comes in, and all of a sudden there's so many more details that are being shared, and it happens quite often. And it, again, is kind of that understanding of the role of the technician, that I feel like the doctor comes in, and then all of a sudden the owner is like, oh, the doctor is here and I need to say all of these other things, when if they understood better why it's so important to tell the story at the beginning, we could be so much more efficient, I think, in our job.
And I know, and you sound very, very polite about all of this, that you were really trying to help some folks maybe listening to the show today who have maybe felt that the profession of veterinary technician is somewhat obscure, to illuminate that so mm-hmm. that no one kind of assumes that you're being arbitrary.
Correct.
But really what folks need to know is that you're working to kind of go through, I imagine in your mind, a sort of a checklist. Mm-hmm. On this program before, we've talked about how in some ways veterinary medicine is a process of elimination precisely because the animals cannot speak mm-hmm. to us and tell us what they're feeling. Mm-hmm. And I am sensing, though not from you, I'm maybe imagining this in my own head, that it could be frustrating to sometimes feel like the human pet owner is not telling you the whole story, but is willing to tell it to the veterinarian.
It is absolutely something that happens a lot, but we all understand that it's never malicious. It's never a thing where they're like, I'm going to withhold information. I think the doctor comes in and says something that sparks their mind just a little bit more, or they've sat there for 5 minutes while you were in the back and had a little bit more thinking too. Sometimes that happens and they'll be like, oh, I forgot to tell you this thing that mm-hmm. happened. But the more prepared that you can be as an owner when you come, having thought through all of the things that led up to whatever it is that you're coming in for, the better that we can do on getting all of our parts and pieces together and then going back and telling the veterinarian what happened and how can we start to address this situation.
If I can pause the conversation right here, we're going to take a short break. Okay. I want to remind listeners, this is Animal Airwaves Live on WUFTFM. I'm Dana Hill. My guest today is Daniel Jonas from the University of Florida College of Veterinary Medicine. And we're talking about the role of the veterinary technician. We're going to be right back after Academic Minute. Hey, welcome back to Animal Airwaves Live here on WUFTFM. I'm Dana Hill, and my guest today is Daniel Jonas from the UF College of Veterinary Medicine. And we're talking today about her profession, the veterinary technician, the sort of nurses that take care of our animals, have a real hands-on role in the treatment of our pets in veterinary clinics all around the country, from your neighborhood veterinary office where you go every year for a checkup for your own pet, to specialty clinics where maybe animals that have a particular kind of problem are being treated. And when we left off, Daniel, we had sort of been talking about kind of a day in the life of a veterinary technician. And we mentioned how you will be speaking with the human client, kind of trying to suss out maybe what it is that the animal is experiencing that has resulted in its visit that day. Mm-hmm. It might be a well visit, and therefore you know it's just going to be vaccines and the like, maybe a dental cleaning. It could be a young animal and you know that probably a spay or neuter is in order. Mm-hmm. But let us say that someone has brought in an animal that has a kind of, I don't know, an undefined malady of some sort. And in that case, a bit more investigation is required. Mm-hmm. Maybe some diagnostic imaging, certainly some blood or other kinds of samples. Mm-hmm. Are there different kinds of technicians who are involved in some of these different roles, or might you go and do some of this radiography?
So in private practice, in your family veterinarian's office, everybody does everything. The technicians are doing anesthesia, surgery, radiology, dentistry. They're doing all of the things. When you get into specialty practice is when everybody starts to become very much in their corner of what they're doing. So at UF, if an animal comes in, let's say they come in through orthopedics for a lameness, our surgery technicians that help with the orthopedic surgery service help with all of the initial exam, figuring out what the treatment plan is. And then they basically relay the information to the radiology technicians. The radiology technicians do all of the radiographs. So it kind of goes down the line from there. If they need anesthesia, they go to the anesthesia team. Everybody's very highly specialized where we work.
Mm-hmm. And your particular role is mm-hmm. what?
I'm a veterinary technician manager, so I oversee about 20 technicians and 6 different specialty services.
Ah, I got you. So are you someone with a bit of hands-on experience in all of that then, especially given that you've been in a private practice?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I've worked in 2 different private practices, one in Wisconsin, one here. Shout out to Micanopy Animal Hospital. I worked there for a year before UF, and then now I can apply all of those things that I learned in private practice to the specialties with whom I work.
Are veterinary technician managers like yourself likely to come from a sort of private practice where they might have had a bit of hands-on experience in all these different kinds of areas?
Yeah, I would say that that's an important background to have so that you can understand all of the different specialties and the general medicine side of it. Any technician, I think, when they come out from school should go to work in a general practice. That's where you're going to get all of your baseline knowledge and skill, and then be able to siphon that into specialty if that's where you end up wanting to go, if something really strikes your fancy and you decide you want to work in only neurology, for instance. But even if you're only working in neurology, you still need to know all of the baseline medicine. We get a lot of cases that come in for a specialty that, as it turns out, should not be seeing that specialty. So we as technicians need to be able to look through the records, talk to the owner, look at this dog and go, you know what? This is not a neurologic issue. It's something completely different. And so that's where all of our background knowledge comes in too.
And to that end, mm-hmm. Let's open up sort of the mailbag here and address a question from a listener. Debbie writes, my female kitty has been treated for an ear infection bilaterally, and I know she's allergic to chicken, mm-hmm. right? Yet she still flicks her ears, and her vet's now prescribed RCRX hydrolyzed kibble for her, which has chicken in the ingredients. She was doing fine on Nature's Valley Instinct rabbit kibble with no chicken. Vet knows best, I guess, but something is irritating her ears and she looks miserable. What should I do?
So I would say a couple things about that. One is there's a misconception about hydrolyzed diets. Yes, they do have chicken in them or some sort of protein source. However, they've been hydrolyzed, meaning that the parts of it that cause the allergy have been basically denatured. So in theory, that protein should not be causing the allergy. So that it can be kind of scary for people who think that, yes, this animal is allergic to chicken. Why on earth am I feeding it chicken? The other part of that is there are lots of things that can cause itchy ears. So things that we as technicians can do for you in that situation is take a look in those ears and see what's going on. That cat may have an ear infection. Another really common thing for cats is ear mites. Super easy to treat, but you do need to get a diagnosis before you decide to treat those. So it's possible that the cat is just having a secondary thing, absolutely unrelated to the ears. Unrelated to the diet that is affecting the ears. My recommendation would be to go back to the doctor and say, hey, I tried your new food. As it turns out, the ears are still a problem. Let's look in these ears, see what else might be going on. And say, as the advocate for your pet, when I was on this other rabbit food, cat did great. Can we go back to that and see how that works? And, you know, you're giving it a try. You're communicating with your veterinarian, not making just decisions on your own about the pet. And hopefully you can find a resolution.
Super. Well, thank you for responding to mm-hmm. that. When you are at work and you're dealing with animals who are well, mm-hmm. I imagine that you get a lot of satisfaction seeing a healthy and happy animal sort of trot away. And maybe especially if that's an animal that you have had experience with before. Mm-hmm. As you mentioned, you might know these animals for their entire lives.
Right,
you see
yeah.
that animal when it maybe comes in for an initial sort of evaluation, when it's just a puppy or a kitten. Mm-hmm. And then you might be around at the end, unfortunately, when that animal is old and frail.
Yeah.
When you are experiencing the latter scenario, mm-hmm. the experience with animals that you've known for a long time, animals that are at the end of their lives, maybe even being on hand for a sort of a humane euthanasia of an animal
yes.
that is just it's just time. How do you work to keep yourself feeling okay about mm-hmm. all of that without having it affect you? Of course, it's going to affect you. I mean, it's sad.
Yes.
And certainly it's sadder for no one more than the animal's owner. And the mm-hmm. animal's owner wants to know and needs to understand that the professionals who are there feel compassion,
yes.
right?
Yes.
Which I'm sure you do. You seem
yes.
like a compassionate person. Is it hard to be compassionate, but also to sort of, I don't know, disenthrall yourself from the kind of tragedy that is end of life that's unfolding mm-hmm. before you?
It's a good question. A lot of people will say that euthanasia must be the toughest part of our job. And it's not. It's actually a gift that we are able to be part of that. And there's lots of disease processes that would lead to a pretty awful death for the pet if we weren't able to make that decision. And so as technicians, we take it very seriously that this is a good experience for the pet and it's a good experience for the owner. We're the ones that are going to be setting up a nice quiet room for you and having a whole bunch of beds around and making sure that everybody's in a comfortable space. We may dim the lights. You know, we have to place a catheter and we understand that that can be a bit stressful sometimes for the animal and for the owner. And so we take that very seriously. And that's something that we put a lot of pressure on ourselves to go in, get the catheter in quickly, and have that be something that's very smooth. I still cry at euthanasias, even if it's a pet that I don't know. Obviously, I know them a little bit, but it's not an animal I've known for years or anything. But it is still the loss of a life. It's still you're sitting there with people that love this animal and they're sad. It's affecting. It's powerful. But I personally, I think it's important to recognize that and to have that last 5 minutes of that animal's life be as smooth and calm as possible. So I work with amazing technicians who are incredibly compassionate, and you will see us come out of a room with tears in our eyes and duck around a corner and cry it out for a little bit, take a little break. We all understand that that's just the way that it is. And that's a very common thing. If people don't cry in euthanasia, that doesn't mean that they don't care. And I think that that's important for people to know. Some people just aren't criers, and that's okay too. They're still affected by it. And we need to recognize that as a profession, that just because you're not outwardly looking sad doesn't mean that you aren't sad. It's a very powerful thing to be there when an animal is dying.
Now, you've made an important point, and that is that sometimes euthanasia is the better option.
Yes.
And we've discussed that on the show before. I know that Dr. Mendizi's been here and Dr. Stone has been here. And this is something that, alas, everyone who loves another living thing, an animal, will have to deal with sooner or later. And, you know, when that time comes, again, that may very well be the best thing that you can do for your pet. For the technicians involved, especially if there's a day where you might do more than one, what helps you get through? I mean, is it better if then the next patient that you see is a little kitten or a puppy or something, or does it kind of, I don't know, bring you down for the rest of the day?
You know, I think it depends on the individual. We joke a lot that no matter how bad the day is in veterinary medicine, there's always something cute to snuggle. And you will oftentimes find us telling each other about very cute animals in the hospital. So if there's a very snuggleable thing, people usually know. So you will frequently find us, if any of us are having a tough time with a case, locating something cute to snuggle. And I think that that's a really cool part of our job, is getting to have that. So it's kind of the whole, like, take your dog to work day sort of idea, right? Where you've got this thing here that's just so excited to see you. But we all have our coping mechanisms to be able to get through it. But at the end of the day, we all understand that it's definitely something that is a gift. Like I said before, it's something that we can help owners through and help them to feel good about the decision. And that is part of job satisfaction too. You know, it's not just sad. It's also that feeling of, we were able to help them understand what's going on, do the client education about it, and help them come to that conclusion that this is really a good decision.
I think it might be said that for some professions, say first responder or military, that the only people who can really understand the experience are people who are in it as well. Would you say that in some respects, for those in veterinary medicine, maybe only other people in veterinary medicine can kind of understand the experience? And if that is true, do you find it helpful to have other colleagues with you on those kinds of hard days who know what you're going through?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We're, I think, as veterinary technicians on any team that I've worked on anyway, including just the hospital at large at UF, everyone's very attuned to how we look when we're stressed. And so you know that in your coworkers, you know how to recognize that, ask them if they need anything, try to give them whatever support they need. It is really important to have that in your colleagues to be able to do that. You know, it's something that even the doctors cry too, and it's not just the nurses that are doing that. Where it's hard. It's hard to go through those processes, but it's important, and we all recognize that.
In the bit of time that we have left here in the show, what would you like the listeners of this program, all of whom I assume love animals, many of whom have animals as pets, what would you like us all to kind of understand about people in your profession, the veterinary technicians, so that we can be, you know, better animal lovers ourselves and also help you do your job, which without you, our animals wouldn't be treated in the first place?
That's a good question. You know, it's a bit of a marginalized profession still, in that people just don't really understand what it is. So having a better understanding and trying to be compassionate towards us as well when we are putting up what you think kind of sounds maybe like a roadblock to get to talk to your doctor, for instance. We're actually the voices of our doctors a lot of times, and we make a lot of phone calls and talk to a lot of owners and try to do that liaising so that the doctor can continue doing a surgery or can continue moving on with other cases, but they tell us exactly what they want us to discuss and call the owners. I think that that's important, that people understand that we are a very critical part of the veterinary care team and that we are a valued member of the team, and we're not as important as the doctors in that they can do all of the things that we are not allowed to do as technicians, but that we also have our own set of skills that is incredibly important to the care of your animal. One thing that people don't recognize for veterinary nurses is none of us are doing it for the money. Human nurses are paid quite well. And even if you're not in specialty, just being a registered nurse, it's a good profession. Veterinary technicians don't make a lot of money, and it's a tough job, and you're basically dealing with people's children who they care about a lot, and it's emotionally draining, and it can be very physically exhausting as well. You're dealing with huge animals all day long, potentially. So we're not doing it because we're getting paid a lot of money. We're doing it because we love it, and that's the thing to remember. We're here to be part of the team to take care of your animal.
Danielle Jones from the UF College of Veterinary Medicine, thank you so much for coming in and talking to me today. I really enjoyed the conversation.
Yeah, thank you so much.
I want to say thank you to Glenn Richards for directing the program today, and to Sarah Carey and the staff over there at the UF College of Veterinary Medicine for their help as well. Thanks to you listeners, and I hope that you will join me again next week for another episode of Animal Airwaves Live. Bye-bye.